Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, and welcome to Why Are People Into That? Live at the Pleasure Chest in New York City. Stop. Hi, everybody. I'm Tina Horn. Apparently, I need to read that off my phone. And Why Are People Into That is my slutty, kinky, queer, perverted as fuck sexuality podcast. I've been producing and hosting Why Are People Into That 100% independently for over 6 years now. I need to change that in this script. Holy fuck. And in the past couple of years, I've been recording some episodes live in front of an audience, often at the sex-positive sex toy retailer, The Pleasure Chest, which is where we are today. And the main difference between the regular Why Are People Into That podcast and the live show is that, in general, on the regular show, we choose one topic, and here I kind of like to do a little bit more of like a variety show and various different things, and a little bit also of audience interaction. And my guest today, I'm so excited, is Lainey Bird. Everybody give it up for Lainey Bird. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I've been on a like adrenaline roller coaster. Where's my jacket? You know, but I found it, and it's very grounding. So let me tell you a little bit about Lainey. Lainey Bird is an indigenous queer photographer, cinematographer, and video editor based in Brooklyn, New York. Through her personal work of both photo and film, she reveals the intersections of fashion and fetishism. She is also experienced in commercial video production as an editor and colorist, primarily working within the beauty industry. And yeah, so yesterday, as we were just talking about, Lainey and I were, and some other folks here today, were at MoMA PS1 for an event called Kink Out Spaces. Who's been to the dome at PS1?
How many of you were actually there last night also? Like this whole room was there.
Thank you for bringing your hangovers to us. I don't want to make any assumptions. There was boot blocking. There were bondage performances. There was dancing. There was spanking. There was a DJ. There was a pet play pen. So there were like human puppies and kitties.
You got your ass beat on stage in front of everyone.
A little bit. I mostly just shook it.
Twerked for a while.
See, here's the thing though, is that I just like move, and then people are like, she was twerking, but I'm like, not really.
I would call that twerking.
Oh, thank you. I feel like I need to take some classes, because I feel like it feels like very like lazy Miley Cyrus twerking, because
no.
I'm just like, I mean, I know how to dance. But I'm just like feeling it in the moment, and then my ass like does things, and people are like, "You were twerking." I'm like, it can't be that easy.
I mean, it can when you have an ass like that.
Oh. Well, thank you. Yeah, I was expecting to get like beat within an inch of my life, and I was expecting to like show off, like being a masochist, and it was like a little bit more. Here we are on this stage, and that ass was playing. But people seem to enjoy it.
I mean, it was entertaining regardless, so.
I live to entertain, and so does my ass, certainly does, so. So that happened, but another really amazing thing that was happening was that on the roof of the dome, the dome
ceiling?
Of the dome?
top?
The top of the dome were a variety of fetish films made by folks in our community, including Lainey. Can you describe your video from that was like being projected like
30 or 40 feet.
The dome itself.
It's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. So your film, how long is the film? Like 5 minutes?
It's like a 10-minute long film right now. And what I showed yesterday isn't even like the final form of what it's going to be. It's essentially just like a rough cut.
Nice.
That I had to put together really quickly in time for the event because I only shot it like a week and a half ago.
Well, thanks for sharing your, showing your work.
Yeah, of course.
Like showing your rough cut.
Right.
So we got treated to this rough cut of what was it called, experiment?
There's like a working title. I called it laboratory, but laboratory. I'm not like set on that by any means. Cool. But it's a film that I made with a Dom friend of mine named Mystic Saad, who you all should look up if you don't know who they are. And the whole idea of the film was conceptualized by them. I just came in to do like the cinematography and the editing for it. But it's essentially just like a rubber fetish film with some medical play that we did in their play space, which is really fun.
Some medical play.
Some, a little
that
bit.
That was some medical play.
Just a little bit.
I was standing with Lucy Sweetkill, who you've shot before, and her partner, and we were kind of like looking around, and then we were looking up, and I was like, okay, the pump is coming out. and then I kind of like looked away and looked back, and she was like forcing
pee.
Yeah, well, she was
part?
Yeah. So she's like forcing her patient
specimen. That's his name.
Thank you, specimen to drink something. And Lucy was like, I looked away for a second. Is he like drinking cum? That's so hot. I was like, I think it's piss. And the other person next to me was like, it's piss. I've been watching the whole time. So that was nice.
Yeah.
So they extracted urine from the person and then the
specimen. Was actually Saad's urine.
Oh, okay.
That they fed to specimen.
Lucky specimen. Tell us a little bit about making that. Like, what was that experience like? Like, how does it compare to some of the other kinds of work that you've done?
It, like, kink-wise or vanilla-wise? Because it's very different from a lot of the vanilla work that I do.
That's an interesting distinction. Well, why don't we start there? Why don't we talk about that? Like, What is the difference between the vanilla work and the fetish work in your, like, art practice?
Well, I mean, most of my vanilla work doesn't involve drinking piss, so there's that. It's usually a much smaller production. I work a lot with Aorta Films, which, again, if you don't follow Aorta Films, you should do that immediately.
Hell yeah.
As one of their filmmakers and as one of their editors. And so I've been on quite a few of their sets now doing these kind of, like, smaller budget porn films. And so the thing that I shot with Saad was pretty similar in just the way that it was set up. And it was a really small crew, just me and one other person handling all the equipment and all the lighting, and then Saad and specimen on set. Whereas like vanilla work is like, you know, a team of like 15 people in like a massive space.
Do you have a preference?
I mean, I prefer the kink stuff because it actually like feels good and like feels important. The vanilla stuff is just like a way for me to pay my rent.
Yeah,
well, mostly.
I mean, yeah, a lot of us have to pay rent.
Right.
Yeah. When you're shooting something like that, do you enjoy like letting players like have a scene and you kind of interact as like a fly on the wall, or you're like looking for things that are interesting to shoot, or compositions that are like, what are you looking for? And do you like to direct people so that you can have control over what you're capturing? Or do you sort of more like feeling like a documentarian that is interacting with performers who are like having an experience or doing a scene?
I feel like with my photo work, I'm doing a lot more directing and really clear directions of like, move this way, look over here, step 3 inches to the left. Whereas with most of my film work, I'm just sort of like literally running around in a circle around a scene that's happening, just trying to capture whatever I can capture. And then we'll occasionally like throw out pause, or can we get another take of that? But for the most part, I just kind of like to let performers do their own thing. I feel like it's more genuine that way. Like, you get candid moments if I'm not like directing everyone's action.
Yeah, when I started my like short career directing porn, my friend Tristan Crane, who had shot me many times, sort of gave me this like cynical, jaded, like, you know, after a while they're just moving shapes.
I mean, kind of.
Does it feel that way for you?
Yeah, a little bit. I was actually editing one of the Aorta films this morning, and I had a moment where I was like eating peanut butter toast at like 8 a.m. and like watching someone squirt and like just watching the footage, trying to find selects. And then I was like, is this is this normal? Like, is this okay that I'm just like watching this so early in the morning and just like eating my breakfast and I'm completely unfazed by like what's in front of me?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty normal to me. Yeah. How did it feel for you as a creator to be in that room with your work being projected, especially in that raw state, and also in a way where like people were watching, but it wasn't like a screening where people's like asses were in place just like watching one right. thing. It was like kind of more like an installation or part of something larger, like, but how does that feel?
I feel like I'm still processing it. I like didn't get a lot of sleep last night and woke up this morning in a bit of like a weird like mental hangover from yesterday.
Yeah.
It feels really important and I'm really proud of the fact that I got to show work in that capacity. I'm excited that I got to film something so kinky and have it on display in this like major institution that doesn't normally support work like that. Because I feel like so much of what I'm trying to do with the photos that I take is like bridging that gap between quote unquote museum quality fine art and just like more taboo fetish photography, and trying to find some sort of middle ground between the two. And so being able to like show my work in a major museum was kind of like a, like I did that.
You totally did.
Yeah.
What's important to you about like being that ambassador or like bridging that gap? What do you think we can achieve if those worlds collide more?
I don't really know. No one's ever asked me that before.
Where does that motivation come from, do you think? Now I'm like therapizing you. Like, what, you know, because, oh, okay, some people are like, I'm a fine artist, and some people are like, I'm a taboo troublemaker.
Mm.
But, you know, what I'm hearing from you, and I feel like I've seen it in your work, that you are maybe interested in, like, demonstrating to institutions that, like, fetish work deserves a place alongside other kinds of work that are, like, seen as more legit.
Right. I mean, I come from a fine arts background, so I think I've always just had this idea in my head that to, like, be successful and as an artist means finding success in that world or finding success in a commercial world while still trying to like hold, you know, my vision and my like integrity as an artist in place without completely losing that in the process of just trying to find more, you know, exposure for the things that I'm creating. So I feel like I kind of have to bridge that gap if I want to be able to show my work like in a large scale capacity. So it's not just, you know, stuck in like porn magazines and that's it.
So it's pragmatic.
Yeah, I guess.
Cool. Excellent. So we're going to talk today in general, because Lainey's work involves fetishism on so many levels. We're going to talk about fetish aesthetics, which, like, try saying that three times. And to do that, I'm going to do something a little loaded and annoying, which is ask you, what does the word fetish mean to you?
Hmm. I think for me personally, fetish means some type of obsession. Mm. And for me, a lot of my own fetishes are object-based or material-based. And so they tend to center around things that are more inanimate. And aren't necessarily like an act or like a type of person in the way that a lot of other fetishes have fetishes. So.
Cool. That's a very concrete definition.
Great.
It makes me think about the pathologizing of fetishism that I find often comes up, where people assume that if someone has a fetish, that if they have a fetish for an object, for example, like pink water bottles, that like they have to have the pink water bottle in the room, in the dungeon, by the bedside table, or like in the bed, or like somehow involved, like in order to enjoy themselves, in order to get off, in order to be fulfilled. Do you feel that way about the things that you have fetishes for, that like if they're not there, there's like something missing?
I think so. I think with some of the more like material fetishes that I have, leather being like a huge one. Like if leather toys or implements aren't to the quality that they want them to be, I have a really hard time actually like getting into the right headspace.
So you're, yeah, it sounds like you're a discerning fetishist. What do fetish aesthetics like mean to you? When or how did you start to feel the urge to incorporate fetishism into your art?
I mean, I've always been an artist and I've always been interested in just creating visual imagery. That just happened to coincide with a developing obsession that I had for fetish wear. And I think it was only natural that the two were going to sort of like converge at a certain point. Fetish aesthetics and fetish wear inform so much of what I do as a photographer, and it informs so much of just what my work looks like, just purely on like a visual level, not even like on a conceptual level. And so the two are constantly going hand in hand.
How do you know that something that you're wearing is fetish wear or like is a fetish object? Like what about a piece of fashion makes it fetishistic?
The design, I think. The material is a big part of that. Like, I mean, I see a huge difference between like buying a pair of high heels that are only like 4 inches tall from like Bloomingdale's compared to buying 7-inch tall pleasers from Purple Passion. You know what I mean? Like they have different meanings to them just based off of the design of them and who's wearing them and in what spaces someone is wearing those things.
What I'm hearing from that is cultural specificity of going to a place like Purple Passion that is a kink and fetish store here in New York. But also the boundary pushingness of 7-inch stilettos as opposed to puny 4 inches, which will barely even make your back hurt. So it can't be a fetish object.
I mean, if it's not uncomfortable, then I feel like it's not like a true fetish piece of clothing.
Why do people like to be uncomfortable?
Masochism.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
I like to be comfortable when I'm getting hurt. That's like my form of masochism. But I'm, yeah, no.
I like love a good, uncomfortable like piece of clothing. Like I don't own shoes that are comfortable. Like I literally don't own shoes that are actually like okay for my feet to wear on the daily. But I just do it anyways because I like enjoy what they look like and I sort of get off on the pain of just like wearing beautiful high-heeled boots every single day.
I like realized that it was raining when I was leaving the house and I was like, oh, I'm gonna, like I definitely was like planning on wearing some nice leather boots, and then I was like, I think I'm gonna wear my like waterproof hiking boots, and I was like, I'm just gonna hide my feet under the table and not stand up so Lainey won't see these Dakey hiking boots that I from REI that I have on. I mean, I like the discomfort. But I do find that like the like consequence of then like the pain after.
I mean, I don't see that any different than like having a bruise after like an impact session.
It's a really good point. It's a really good.
Someone snapped in the audience. Yeah. Someone agrees.
Yeah, no, that soreness.
I think there's like an endurance to it too.
Of course.
Like going out for an evening wearing something that's uncomfortable, knowing that you can withstand that for like 6 hours at a time. Yeah. Like that also just like personally feels like validating.
Totally. I mean, listen, I reserve judgment for some of these folks that you see tottering around Manhattan. I'm like, listen, girl, if you're gonna wear the shoes, wear them. Like, but they, you know, they don't know how.
Right.
They're obviously like don't want to hurt enough.
Right.
They like expect they expect it to not hurt.
They expect it to be easy.
And then they don't look as good.
Right.
Embrace the pain, ladies. We should teach classes.
We should.
Yeah. I think your work is fucking fantastic. I mean, I like you as a person, and that's why I wanted to have you on my show. But like, you know, and we live in a very like visual culture with the internet and social media and the other people's feeds, or like folks that I knew that were like, I did this shoot with Lainey, and then I was like, who is this person? I need to follow them. And then like looking through all your stuff, like I feel like your work reminds me of a lot of the like classic, and by classic I mean like from the 80s, photography, where not only like something that we were talking about before we started recording is like you can be a portraitist.
I don't know if that's a word.
Someone who takes portraits, a photographer that takes portraits. It's been a long couple of days. A photographer that takes portraits of people, and you could take a portrait of someone who's wearing fetish gear, who is in a fetish outfit and wearing fetish fashion, but that doesn't necessarily make it a fetish photograph.
Right.
And, or it doesn't necessarily mean it has, to my mind, like a fetish aesthetic, or that person's work. Now I think of this person as like someone who has a fetish aesthetic to their work beyond just the people in your pictures and your videos, like wearing leather, wearing latex, wearing very, very, very tall shoes, wearing hoods, wearing masks, where, you know, like lots of like extreme things. But there are things about the composition, about the lighting, about the way that people are holding their bodies, where I feel like I'm looking at this like other alien dimension, like of this like sex dimension. That I would like to travel to.
I'm going to start calling my studio that.
Yes, please do. I don't know. Like, does that sense of... There's like an inhumanness to it that I like. Does that resonate with you? Do you feel like you're... like, that's something that just like naturally comes out of you? Or is that something that you're trying to achieve?
I think that just naturally comes out. I mean, I think that's a really great compliment to see that a lot of my work is referencing like 80s fetish photography, because so much of my favorite work comes out of that time period. And I also collect books and I collect fetish magazines, and almost all of them are from like late 70s into like the early 90s. And so those are the types of images that I'm looking at when I'm preparing to do a photo shoot. So yeah, so much of my work is like referencing those artists that I have been obsessed with for a long time.
I mean, I guess there's like a sense of the uncanny or the abject or like the monstrous. Like, does it feel like that's something that you're trying to access in your art? Like something that is like beyond human?
Not intentionally.
Maybe I'm just projecting.
Yeah, not intentionally.
I'm like, this is sexy. So I'm assuming that it's inhuman.
I mean, I think composition has a lot to do with the like fetish aspect of my work. Even if I were shooting vanilla clothing, it might still end up looking like a fetish photo, so just like, because of the way that I like frame my subjects and the poses that I'm drawn towards and the facial expressions that I try and like get out of people when I'm shooting someone.
So like if I was wearing these waterproof hiking boots and jeans and this cotton t-shirt, you could make a fetish photograph out of me.
I think we could do something.
Great,
with that,
because then I would be very comfortable and then I would be very happy. That makes sense that you would be able to the maybe like the way that you see the world is fetishistic, so it doesn't necessarily like someone doesn't need to be wearing a hood in order for you to create fetish imagery out of them.
Right. I mean, I did the Periscope with Lucy and Dia a while ago, and Lucy actually made a really good point. She said that she thought that my work was as strong as it was, or that I was able to shoot femdoms in the way that I do because I'm a bottom, which I am. And oh, that resonated so hard for me, and it makes so much sense.
Tell me everything about that. That is a very wire people into that train of thought that I would like to catch right now. Yeah,
I mean, I just have like such a deep appreciation and respect for femdoms, and I think that shows in the way that I shoot them in my work. Like my favorite place to be when I'm shooting someone is like as low to the ground as I can be. Like shooting up at someone. Actually like saw like a BTS video of me on set from a couple weeks ago, and I didn't realize that someone was taking it, and they're like panning the room, and you see like the model and the stylist, and then you pan a little bit further, and I'm like literally like flat on my stomach, like with my camera like shooting up at this model. Made me laugh. I was like, wow, I look like that while I'm on set. I had no idea.
That is so amazing.
that level of like respect that I have for the models that I'm shooting kind of shows through the way that I'm shooting them.
Like a sense of reverence.
Right. Obsession.
It's interesting though, and maybe we can talk about like the queer gaze, just to put the lead right out there. Because I don't know if you're familiar with this phenomenon. I first learned it back in my like model mayhem days of like 2006 of GWCs. Do you know what a GWC is?
No, what does that stand for?
A guy with camera.
Oh God.
which is what it sounds like.
Right.
So like back in the day when you couldn't just shoot professional looking photographs with your phone and then like make a shitload of money and like, you know, post them to a social media and be like, I'm a dominatrix. Like you had to hire,
find a guy with a camera.
You had to find a fucking GWC and they were the Model Mayhem was crawling with them. And,
right.
They wanted to do like trade for print and you were like, I'm broke. So cool. And so it's interesting because like a lot of those guys, surprise, surprise, were also bottoms. And they definitely also were obsessed.
Are you trying to call me something?
No, I'm saying you're special and I'm hoping we can unpack what makes you so special because like those guys were creeps. And by the way, if they were creeps that took great pictures that made me money, I would have been like, all right. Mm. But the pictures were not good.
No, because they're not artists.
They weren't artists.
They're just perverts who own cameras.
So I guess you are both a bottom and a pervert.
And an artist.
And a very talented individual with a vision. And I feel like there is also something where like your reverence comes from a place of you can put someone on a pedestal and like shoot like femdoms, like shooting like powerful women or powerful queers. There's like all kinds of gendered people in your work.
Right.
Maybe we can talk about the word objectification because like I find like that word is so complicated, right? Because like,
right.
I mean, listen, I love to be, it's a very relaxing to be an object sometimes. And like when you are like material for an artist, especially like a photographer or a videographer.
Right, then you are an object.
Exactly, you're raw material, right?
Right.
But so then like when does objectification like tip over into disrespect or like when does, I don't know, I feel like I've had the experience, maybe other people in this room have had the experience of like the difference between a good feeling of reverence when it feels like wonderful to be worshipped versus like a really like obnoxious feeling of reverence where someone is like trying to like take something from you.
I mean, I don't ever have like alternative motives when I'm like shooting someone on set, so I'm not like the guy with the camera who like wants to shoot someone and then try and fuck them afterwards. I respect my models. I have conversations before we even start shooting about what do you want to shoot? What type of dynamic do you want captured on camera? Do you have specific things that you want? What are your clients looking for? And we like talk through all of those things before we even start shooting, which I feel like just creates a sense of safety to be on set with me. And yeah. I'm a woman and I'm queer. So yeah. I feel like that alone just makes it a little bit easier for some models to be on set.
Do you have any like specific techniques when you're shooting someone specifically for images that they want to use to market themselves to clients? Like how do you make sex workers money is my question.
Well, that's what I mean. Like the conversations we have beforehand where I'll ask if there are really specific things that they need or if there's a certain way that they need to be captured in a certain way to pull in more clients. Sometimes it's being as specific as like, oh, my client like loves my armpits. So like, can we please take like armpit photos? And I'm like, great. We'll make sure that we have time for that. Or, a lot of the doms that I shoot want ass photos. So they always ask me for those. And we make sure that we actually like do that. And I like set up the lights properly and everything just for like that one shot so they can have that for their clients.
How do you set up lights properly for an ass?
There's a trick to it.
All right. We won't reveal your secrets. How do you shoot armpits?
Just understanding lighting, I think.
It's all in the lighting.
Right. Always.
Cool. Yeah, is there a way that you turn different parts of people's bodies into, to make like the focus of the obsession like a part of the person's body? Mm-hmm. Like an armpit or an ass or if yeah, or feet.
I mean, yeah, I think I'm thinking about those things just actively, like as I'm shooting, just like through the viewfinder, as I'm just framing things as I go, those things are sort of just subconsciously in the back of my mind.
So let's talk about the difference between still photography and videography. How does the role of fetishism change in your work when movement is involved? And of course, videography also involves sound and right. all kinds of different elements.
I don't know. I feel like I sort of see them in the same way. Just one is with motion and one is without. I've even done shoots where I'm doing both video and photo at the same time, where yeah. I'm literally switching back and forth between different cameras.
Yeah.
So I sort of just see things visually in the same way, regardless of whatever medium I'm shooting it in.
What are some examples of some art and culture that have influenced your work?
Skin 2 magazine has been a huge influence on my photography, but specifically like within the 80s. So when the magazine started.
What was going on in the 80s?
Well, I think there was this like kind of explosion of fetish magazines that came out of the 80s, because that was around the time when I think younger generations started to really embrace fetishism. And that's when a lot of kink clubs were starting to open up. And so these publications were popping up at the same time as this like subculture was starting to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think earlier, like 60s, 70s, fetishism was something that was maybe more private, and it was something kept in the home, and it was something more secretive. And I think it was in the 80s that people started to maybe be a little bit more out in the open with it.
Makes sense.
Plus the 80s are also when but just photography had like a huge peak, just like in the art world too, because technology finally caught up, so artists could use photography as a way to make art. And so that also just sort of like bled into the fetish culture.
That makes sense. And there was like more like commercial, like widespread commercial availability of
right.
photo equipment and gear.
Right.
And cocaine.
And that.
Yeah.
And rubber.
And rubber. Yeah, definitely. What are some photographers that you think that people should check out, or any like particular books? Or
I get asked this question all the time, and I'm so awful with names that I always end up drawing a blank, but I can plug one of my Instagram accounts.
Yeah.
So outside of my like photography account, I run another one called Dress for Pleasure, and I just post my favorite fetish artists, and a lot of them are book scans just from like my own personal collection.
Cool.
And so if you're interested in fetish art, specifically fetish photography, then you should just look at that page, because there's like just a huge resource of different artists.
I love that Instagram. Is there movies? Is there music?
That Instagram account is actually taken from a documentary called Dress for Pleasure that came out in 1977, I want to say, like maybe mid to late 70s. And it's centered around the rubber scene that was happening in London, like in the late 70s. And a lot of it focuses on the sex boutique that was open in London at the time.
Oh, right.
Yeah. The Vivienne Westwood
right.
boutique that she owned.
A sort of like epicenter of
for fetish
punk
wear
and punk culture. Yeah.
And there was a lot of crossovers within the two at that time. And then it also sort of centers around John Sutcliffe, who was a fetish photographer and is also the publisher who started Automage magazine in like the 60s, which ran up until I think maybe like the mid 80s. But that documentary is like incredible, and it's really beautiful too. The footage is just like really gorgeous.
You know, hearing you talk about like the rubber scene, and again, thinking about Kink Out yesterday and the like community coming together around like all of this art and culture. What do you think the role of community or scenes or like people coming together like is in the creation of aesthetics and like sort of like a shared experience of fetish culture?
I mean, I think because of community, we're able to assign social or cultural meaning to certain garments or things.
Right.
And that
like
can
black leather motorcycle jackets,
right? Yeah. Or like the hanky code.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that can become sort of like a non-verbal language that people can share as a community.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is really important to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's important for cruising.
That too.
Yeah, but it's also important, I think, for people who may feel isolated in, you know, it can help destigmatize the way that people may feel about their desires, knowing that there are other people out there who share them, and like maybe even if two individuals not necessarily like be compatible in a relationship, but like knowing that they are not like the only people who have like deviant desires or interests. Right. It seems like the outward physical signifiers are more than just like something frivolous and superficial,
right?
Or even fun. Like it's actually something that helps people not only like express themselves, but like create a sense of belonging.
Right. I mean, I think all subcultures use aesthetics to sort of like create like a communal, to establish like community among people.
Yeah. It's interesting that you were talking about how so many of your fetishes are object based, because so many of my fetishes are like highly conceptual and abstract. And sometimes, yeah, that like presents a challenge, because I can't just like look
go buy the thing.
Yeah, that's true. Why can't I buy the thing? I mean, but how does it feel for you to like have such a strong connection to objects, and then to relate to them commercially? Like the fact that you can like go to stores and find the thing that reflects something about your inner life that you want to express. Like, what is that process like?
Just doing the work that I do just allows me to sort of just further my own fetishes, which is fun.
Yeah.
And it's great that I made a career out of doing something that was a hobby at one point. It was just like a personal thing that I was interested in. Just a lot of the way that I create work ends up being fetishistic, just in the nature. In the nature that I'm doing it. I mean, just talking more about obsession, the way that I approach image making is highly obsessive. I'm a perfectionist and I'm highly neurotic. And I think that shows in my work. I was trying to like figure out a way to explain this. And the only example I could come up with was a photo shoot that I did semi-recently, where I really wanted to take photos of pleaser heels. And so I went and I ordered a pair of steel tip patent pleasers, and they're not even in my own size. They're in my friend's size, Vanilla Honey, who I shoot all the time. And I didn't give her the shoes. They're not hers. They're mine that I allow her to wear on set so I can take photos of them. And so I buy these shoes and I bring her to my studio and I tell her what to wear and I tell her how to do her makeup and I tell her how to style her hair. And then I have her put on the shoes and I light them perfectly, and it takes me like an hour. I'm like moving lights back and forth, like inch by inch. And then I take like 300 photos and then sit with them for like 2 weeks, mulling over them until I can decide which like final six are actually going to make the cut. And then I spend hours and hours retouching every single image, like pixel by pixel, until it's like absolutely perfect, just for like one photograph of a shoe that I wanted.
That, what an interesting expression of being a bottom. It is because you're like, it's reverent and worshipful. Like in a way, it sounds like you're like dressing someone up like your doll.
And
like,
I mean, there is a part of that too, which I enjoy, which is something that I think is worth unpacking, but I haven't quite figured out like what that is.
Let's figure it out now. No, I mean, but there is, I can definitely see how it's still coming from a bottom place, because it's also like, it's still reverent and worshipful. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's like objectifying from the bottom. That's cool. Like, as somebody who is kinky and queer and is an artist who creates kinky queer art. How do you feel about people who are neither kinky nor queer, like, taking just the superficial aspects of our culture and, I don't know, capitalizing on them, using them as raw material? Like, where do you land on that? Do you think, like, it's all fair game? Do you think that it is harmful? Like, do you think that it paves the way for somebody like you to be able to, like, show work in a museum or make money?
That, I think it is both harmful and also I'm benefiting off of it, if I'm being totally honest.
Yeah. Well, in what would, let's talk about the harm first. In what ways is it harmful?
Well, I think it's harmful if people are putting images out there in the world that are supposed to be of kink dynamics, but they're not coming from an educated place. One, you can just give a bad rap to it. Two, if you're showing that imagery to people who are also uninformed, they may take that at its surface level and maybe try and apply it to something. And then that gets really dangerous.
Something that's coming to mind is that fucking Netflix show.
Oh, God.
Bonding. Yeah. Where the, like, dominatrix is wearing a collar. I mean, this is, like, the classic thing that we're, like, always making fun of, is the dominatrix and the collar, where it's, like, it's not that, you know, a dominatrix, she can do whatever she wants, but, like, they're probably, like, not putting her in the collar because she's doing whatever she wants. They're putting her in the collar because they're, like, this is a kinky thing.
Right.
But they, like, don't appreciate that that generally signifies someone who is not
or didn't do the research to know.
How much fucking research do you correctly. Have to do to understand that the bottom wears the collar? It's real basic stuff, guys.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel torn about it most of the time. I think especially with just sort of this, like, peak in mainstream fetish wear that I'm seeing, that there are latex dresses on, like, major runways now, and, like, red carpet events, people are, like, wearing latex.
Yeah.
Which I personally think is really cool. But then at the same time, I also know that it can be really harmful at the same time, or it can almost, like, exploit the designers. It can cast a shadow over the actual community that those types of pieces are coming from. Yeah, I mean, it's stealing a piece of our culture and then sort of just, like, using it for mainstream purposes, and that's not okay. But at the same time, if, like, some of my friends who are latex designers get paid to dress some major celebrity for a red carpet event, then I'm going to be really excited about that. And I don't think it needs to be this, like, elitist, like, secretive thing that we have to protect all the time. I think there is a way that we can sort of, like, share that type of imagery and those types of garments in a mainstream light, but it has to be done with, like, education and respect for where it comes from.
You really are a pragmatist. I love that. Yeah, I guess, like, you know, the other element of it is, as long as kink and BDSM and fetishism is stigmatized and pathologized, and a lot of, you know, like, related identities, like queer identities and gender nonconforming identities and sex work identities, like, are marginalized,
right,
then, like, privileged folks are, like, taking the thing that gives them just, like, just enough edge.
Right. But I mean, like, J-Lo was on a pole at the Super Bowl, but there were, like, raids happening at the same time that nobody knew about.
Perfect example. Yeah. The whole thing about pole dancing. And I mean, that's where the hashtag not a stripper versus hashtag yes, a stripper comes from, is
right.
Like, you know, people taking pole classes and being like, here's a picture of me doing a pole trick, but I'm not a stripper. And it's
right.
Like, well, why?
What's wrong with that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, what's wrong with that? But also there's this thing where people are unaware that there is, like, a thrill that they're getting out of the association with the dangerous thing,
and without actually doing it or being a part of it.
Yeah. And but also, like, putting it down, you know, like, actively putting it down. So they're, like, talking out of both sides of their mouths and being like I'm better than this, and the way that I'm better than it is by doing just enough of it,
or trying it on
trying it on. Yeah, exactly, Liz. Like a Halloween costume, right. Which is another thing that people do with fetish gear.
Right.
Is like dress up as like a dominatrix for Halloween.
Right. Or just cultures in general.
Yeah. Lots of cultures.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a thing. Totally. How are we going to force people to do better?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that one.
Do you feel like it's important for you to be out about your identities, like in the platform of your work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you feel like that makes a difference?
I think so. I mean, I use the same name for my vanilla work as I do as all of my photography, and all my accounts are linked together. My website has my fetish work and my commercial work in the same place. So if my vanilla clients wanted to Google me, it would not take them very long to find all of the other type of work that I do outside of the vanilla stuff. I feel like that's important.
It totally is important.
To just be upfront with it and unashamed about the things that I'm interested in or my identity.
Have you encountered stigma? Like, do you feel like you have lost work as a result of integrating those identities?
I don't think so, because I think my vanilla clients know that I'm good at my job regardless of what I do in my personal life. I'm interested in fetish wear, or just I'm interested in fashion, generally speaking, interested in fashion, but then specifically within that, interested in fetish wear as a means for creating personas. Mm. I feel like that is so much of why I love fetish wear in the first place. Just for me personally, like what it means to put on certain things and go out in public, just the way that it can change my behavior, the way I move around a space, my confidence levels, that feels really integral to my own fetishes. And then also one of my like favorite things about shooting people on set is like watching that transformation happen. Yeah. Like having a model come to set in like sweatpants and tennis shoes, and then watching her like put on makeup and a full cat suit, and like seeing this like dramatic shift in posture and the way that someone kind of just like moves around on a set. That's really fascinating to me. And I like capturing that. So
yeah, that's rad.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the transformative power of fetish and fashion, and like the way that we can use it to access something that we can't access otherwise.
Right. I think all clothing does that, though. It's like personal expression. It's about creating an image of how you want the world to perceive you based purely on your physical appearance.
Well, what if my fetish is for not wearing any clothes?
Well, then the world would perceive you in a certain way if you never wore clothes.
I mean, that's how they perceive me. That's pretty much how it's gone down. Yeah, it's so funny. I really did not know anything. I still don't know anything about fashion, but I did not know anything about fetish fashion before I became a sex worker. And like, I'd never owned a pair of high heels until I responded to a Craigslist ad for a guy who was starting a shoe fetish website.
Oh, yikes.
Just
was that just like his personal collection?
I don't know for sure. All I know is that he wanted to meet up with me at like a discount shoe store on Market Street. Because I was like, I don't own it. I was like, I'll do this, but I don't own any high heels, which was true. Hmm. It's the only true thing I ever told someone in Craigslist. and he was like, oh, that is fine. I'll buy you some. And so I met up with him in public. And then we walked around the store, and I picked out these like cherry red pumps and like tried them on, and he bought them for me, and then we like parted ways, and then I emailed him to be like, so when are we gonna do this shoot? And I never heard from him again. So
all he wanted to do was buy the shoes.
I mean,
great.
It was great. I mean, he also could have just said that.
Hmm.
But that's fine.
Maybe that was part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like a false pretense. I like to know what I'm getting myself into. Like,
that's fair.
Yeah, just like tell me you want to take me fucking shoe shopping. Like, yeah. Make up a website you're starting. I mean, it's also possible that he thought he was gonna start a website and then got lazy. Mm. But
maybe he was just so satisfied by the shoe shopping experience that he didn't need to go forth with the website.
You know what? Yeah, he was like, I've done it all.
Yeah.
I've done it. Yeah, there's nothing more for me to do. I've reached my peak with this 24-year-old scum punk.
In cherry red pumps.
Cherry red pumps, yes. It's totally true. But anyway, I guess I like leather more than latex, but like mostly because I'm a brute and it's more durable. And I did learn to like walk in heels and learn to appreciate the sexiness of heels and the power of heels for sure. But there are just like so many things that I just like could not be fucking bothered. And I would like people would buy me like corsets. And then I would like get all like laced up in them for a session.
And you don't like that?
No, because then I would just be like, I can't do the thing that I'm trying to do. I'm just going to take this off. You've seen how it looks, right? Okay, I'm going to take it off. I don't love it.
I mean, to each their own.
True. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I once worked for, out of this woman's dungeon on 29th on the West Side. And, she was always a bit more old school than me, and she like would always be shocked when I would like come out of session and she'd be like smoking menthols and like and ready to like collect her cash for the rental, and she once said to me, "You're the most naked dominatrix I've ever met."
That's an amazing compliment.
There was a moment that I never confronted her about it, but I think that there was a moment where she thought that maybe I was like doing full service because she like couldn't. Because
you were always naked?
I was always naked. Yeah.
I mean, it's
except
comfortable.
Except for my shoes, you know? But like, but yeah, it was just, and I felt the most, this is the point that I'm getting at. I always felt much more powerful. I still do, actually. Why am I talking in the past tense? Like, I feel more powerful naked than in like any, even like the sexiest clothes, the sexiest shoes that I've ever had, which like explains why I was running around MoMA yesterday with my ass hanging out. Like, I feel that's like how I feel most powerful. That's my persona. I don't know, like the fact that other people are uncomfortable being naked and I'm just not
running around.
Yeah. So I like that. I don't know. That's my fetish, I guess. I guess that's called being an exhibitionist. Yeah. What do you think? What do you think
about your naked fetish or?
Yeah.
I mean,
you're the fetish expert.
I mean, again, to each their own, like if that makes you happy, then then go forth.
Yeah. Okay, I will. On that note, do you guys have any questions about anything that we've talked about today?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Valentine's Day may be over this year, but it's always the season for love at the Pleasure Chest. There's some great workshops rounding out the end of February at Pleasure Chest stores in New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago. Wednesday, February 26th at the 2nd Avenue store in Manhattan, check out Cruise Control, the threesomes edition with Leon. Brush up on proper cruising etiquette while rolling solo or looking for a threesome. Plus strategies for building your own ethical open relationships and safer sex tips. If you're in Chicago on Sunday, February 23rd, check out Kinky and Creative Blowjobs with Erica from 4 to 6 p.m. Elevate your blowjob game to the level of artistic expression, wowing your partner and yourself with the undeniable beauty of a cock well sucked. And in LA, Tuesday, February 25th, check out Conversations for Couples, Passion, Intimacy, Sex, and More with Dr. Jess. That's from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pleasure chest workshops are always free and designed to be inclusive of all genders, orientations, and relationship styles. Don't forget to follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram and Twitter for up-to-the-minute info on these workshops and much more from this sex-positive community icon. And now, on with the show. So the question is, what does Lainey appreciate about photographing leather and photographing latex?
Photographing latex is like my favorite thing to do.
It's very shiny.
It's so shiny. It makes me so happy. It's really hard to light.
Mm.
And so I really like that challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's like such a beautiful material just to look at. I love the way it smells. I love lubing it.
How do you capture the smell in your
I don't. Photos? That's just for me.
Well, that's nice though. That's a little something just for you.
Yeah. But I think just like personally, I have a latex fetish. And so that just sort of like extends into my art making.
Do you think that there's something about the material and like the way that it creates this like veneer, mm-hmm. this like gloss over what the whatever the form is of the thing that you're photographing?
I mean, I think latex has a way of like perfecting whoever is wearing it, and that's really satisfying, especially when that's paired with like really extreme forms of other fetish wear, really high heels, really tight corsets. Then you end up sort of turning the body into this modified version of itself that I think is just really stunning to look at.
Yeah,
just like the smallest waist, the highest shoes, the shiniest bodies, like just extreme on like all levels.
Do you think the word perfect is so interesting? Because it, like, perfection is subjective.
Hmm.
Do you not agree? Do you think that perfection is empirical?
I think I have like such a complicated relationship to the word perfect, I feel like. Because I'm so neurotic and obsessive, and I'm always trying to just do better and to learn more. And with every photo shoot, I'm always trying to like one up myself every single time. And so I'm always striving for like the perfect image, or always striving to like make something that like satisfies me on a deep level of like knowing that what I made like was quote unquote perfect, but like I will never get there. And I know that, but that's also like what motivates me.
So you're edging yourself.
Pretty much.
Well, I guess like just to like give a counterpoint, like what if I feel like something that has like a flawed or rough surface as opposed to like a smooth and polished surface, or something that is like sloppy is my version of perfection, or like something that I am like striving for, or like,
I mean, I'm not against that.
Yeah,
like I just have my own definitions of like what that looks like in my mind.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I guess again,
their own. Yeah, exactly.
Well, what about leather?
I don't shoot leather as much.
Interesting.
I feel like I've sort of pigeonholed myself into being the latex photographer. And so most people who come to me for photo shoots end up only bringing latex because they know that I know how to shoot it and they know that I enjoy shooting it. So I don't get to shoot leather as much as I would like to.
What do you have any like dreams of what of how you want to photograph leather?
Not necessarily. Not that I've thought about, at least.
Is there any like shoot that you've done in the past that where you were shooting leather that you really enjoy?
I did a recent shoot with Mistress Roxanne, and she's like a big leather fetishist, and she brought a ton of leather on set and had a few get-ups that were just like head-to-toe leather, and that was really exciting for me to be able to like light that, because you light it differently than latex too, so getting to like play with the lights in a different way where I wasn't just so focused on making sure that like the shine was hitting in the right place was just like a different type of experience that I liked.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Cool. Any other questions?
Just like, what is my personal relationship to my transformation when I'm wearing fetish wear? For me personally, fetish wear and putting it on does really amazing things for my confidence levels, especially when I'm in public spaces, because like I'm actually like a huge introvert and I get social anxiety really badly. And I also have imposter syndrome. So sometimes it's really hard for me to be in kink spaces, especially given that I have this like bizarre internet platform where people recognize me and like strangers come up to me all the time. And there's something about putting on a very like well curated outfit of like my favorite fetish wear pieces that can give me confidence, even if maybe I'm not necessarily feeling that internally at the time.
Yeah.
And it makes me just feel like I'm the best possible version of myself, even if I'm like spiraling internally.
Right on. Do you feel like it ever like sort of like sinks in, like you create the veneer and then it like,
and then I feel it?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, rad.
Yeah,
cool.
I think also there's a part of it, like if I'm wearing fetish wear to go to a play party, because I'm a bottom in my dynamics, but I don't necessarily read as a bottom just in my day-to-day, there's something about getting dressed that can help kind of bring me into that headspace, especially if I'm wearing something that's like very uncomfortable, that can kind of like gear me up to be in the headspace to actually like bottom for somebody during a scene.
Cool.
Yeah,
you're like submitting to fashion. So the question is about like sort of riffing on cultural appropriation, but also being queer in a cis heteronormative white supremacist, I'm just gonna throw that in there, society. Yeah, what obstacles have we faced?
I mean, I try to not hang out in straight spaces anymore for that reason. I try to avoid them at all costs, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah, although something that is always on my mind is the fact that often for spaces to be anti-normative, a lot of the time they are exclusively female spaces or exclusively female and trans spaces, and like I love those spaces, but like my favorite sexy spaces are also inclusive of queer men. I it's one of my worst qualities is my love of men. Sometimes there I do encounter this sort of like complex biphobia when I want to create those spaces or participate in those spaces, and people are like, well, all men are gross, or like cis men are gross, and I'm like,
but I like them.
I like them sometimes, to my own chagrin. It's a way that like oppression hurts all of us, right? Because like if then we have to like respond to oppression by like creating exclusive or separatist spaces, and then we have a pressure that like we have to have a certain taste or a certain identity in order to be a part of a subculture, then that it just ends up being limiting. Yeah, that's like a bummer for me sometimes. But I, you know, then I try to figure out ways around it. I mean, one corrective that I've seen that I think is really great is like play spaces where if you are a cis male, you have to be like vouched for by someone who's not a cis male, or like if you are a cis male, you have to like turn an extra look,
or you have to pay more money,
or you have to pay $100. Yeah, which is like close the wage gap, please. Yeah, but I'd like to see like more proactive strategies for
like actual inclusive spaces.
Yeah, we all have something to learn from one another as well. That's what I think. It's such a great question. I'm glad you brought it up again. So this goes back to the guy with camera question, and like, is this ultimately like a male gaze versus female gaze versus like queer gaze, bottom gaze, a question? And I think it's complicated. It kind of goes back to what I was just saying, that you can't just like, you can't create a space like a safe space where like there are no abusers, like by having like a strict gender policy, you know, and like you can't, queer female photographers like could be creeps or could be rapists or could violate boundaries or could like make you not feel your best and not take your best pictures or misrepresent them, their professionalism or their talent. It just so often happens to be the straight white guys. There's got to be something behind that. I've noticed this pattern. I mean, it has to do with power. It has to do with empathy.
I think a lot of the people that I shoot also identify as queer. And so there may be a sense of solidarity that happens, even if I am shooting a femdom who maybe presents hyper-femme or as more heterosexual for their clients, but are maybe queer in their personal life. Being able to like relate on that level when the camera is not actually going creates a sense of safety that you maybe necessarily wouldn't get if you were shooting on set with a straight cis male who was also looking at you as the hyper femme heterosexual persona that you're creating for work. And I can kind of like see beyond that because so many of my friends are DOMs and are sex workers, and I understand the nuance and that like work and personal life sort of dynamic.
Yeah, and you have a fucking imagination.
That too.
That's a really great point. I mean, I think that goes back to my story about Market Street and the cherry red pumps and the Craigslist guy, right? And like the key phrase being false pretense. I have worked, I think, with male photographers or videographers that I admire. I'm racking my brain. I'm sure I have. No, I'm sure I have. If it's so obvious, and they always think they're being so sneaky, you know, you like smell a rat. And then sometimes, you know, you're in a situation where you're like, well, I'm here and I put on the, I took a shower and I'm like, I'm going to take these, you know, so maybe I can get something, you know, especially if you, you know, are used to seeing men as someone that you can like get something out of, like resources. And so you're like, well, maybe I'll get some good pictures out of this. And then you have to sort of negotiate with yourself and navigate that. So like, like somebody who has the skill to like bring out what the model wants to portray, as opposed to just like either getting the thing that they think is hot and just assuming that everybody else will also think that that's hot, which is not true. But also, like, are they trying to, are they like obviously getting off on being in the room with you and having access to you and thinking that the camera permits them to like treat you like a paying client, like they are a paying client, which they're not, and it doesn't. And then of course there are tons of horror stories, and it's a very real dynamic where then those photographers take advantage of the situation to push the session into more than what was agreed to, or worse, or beyond that. Yeah, men should stop being sneaky.
Right.
Everyone should stop being sneaky, unless you've like negotiated a sneaky scene and you have a sneak fetish or a sneaker fetish, which is different.
If someone is hiring me to shoot them, I'm not going into that with like my own personal desires informing any of it ever.
It's pretty basic stuff.
It's purely professional. Like if someone is paying me for content, then like I can creative direct, I can give creative input, but like those photo shoots tend to be sort of directed by the models and what they're needing for their clients. It's not about like my own personal gain, nor have I ever felt like turned on while I was shooting someone ever.
Never. Interesting.
Because I think I'm looking at it from such a technical standpoint that like my mind doesn't even go there. Same with the porn that I've shot too. When I'm editing it, like I don't get turned on by it. I'm purely looking at it from like, does this clip make sense next to this clip?
Just,
like, is the lighting okay here? Yeah. Like I'm not looking at it from like my own personal, like, personal gain.
Do you think it's unethical to get turned on by, like when you're shooting or when you're editing?
I don't know if it's unethical. I just, like, I don't think my brain would be able to be technical and be my best artistic self if I was distracted by, like, being aroused at the same time.
Do you think you can tell when you look at a picture if the photographer was aroused.
Maybe if the photo's really bad.
The library is open. That's fascinating.
Like, if you don't give a shit about lighting and composition, but you shot like a sexy photo of someone, then like maybe you were only doing it for the sexy photo and you're not doing it for like the artistic integrity of the image you were trying to create.
Do you think it's possible to be really turned on and create good art at the same time?
Yes. Someone out there just said yes. I think it is, just for me personally, like those two things like don't intersect.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like two different parts of my brain.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool. Fascinating. I think we have time for one more question. Yeah. So the question is, do you have ethical rules about like if you've slept with someone or played with them or are currently involved with them, would you shoot them?
I have never had a sexual relationship with anyone that I've shot. I've had some type of play dynamic with maybe one person, but I personally like have strong boundaries around crossing those two things because I feel like it could get messy and I feel like it would make the professional aspect of the relationship really difficult. So I try really hard to keep those things very separate. And in the few occasions where it's been brought up in conversation, it's usually been guided by the model making it known to me that they were interested in that. I've never like made my attraction to someone known if I'm shooting them, because I would never ever want to make a model uncomfortable if they're coming to me for professional reasons and then all of a sudden I'm that photographer who's like, hey, so like I don't ever want to be that person. So I tend to just like keep really strong boundaries around that. If it was someone that I was involved with previously that wanted to hire me for a shoot, we would just need to have very long detailed conversations around boundaries to make sure that like that friendship or that sexual dynamic can stay intact and we can also create like a professional relationship at the same time. Yeah. Boundaries.
Boundaries. Try them. You'll like them. For somebody who is both a professional and also a perfectionist, what is your relationship to sexting? Like in terms of like nudes, like taking are you like someone's like, hey, well, like, can I see a picture of you right now? It's like, BRB in 90 minutes.
Oh, it's like
set up the lighting.
It's like a full photo shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't send like no pun intended, but like half-assed nudes.
It would be so, God, there would be, I'm sorry, I am being a creep right now, but like, it would be so sadistic to be like, just take a sloppy selfie right now and send it. Like,
Yeah, that would probably like send me into so much anxiety.
Well, that's what safe words are for. As always, I want to thank the Pleasure Chest, especially Ryan and Bahar, and of course my guest Lainey. Where can people find you on the internet?
So you can find me on my personal Instagram that has all my photography on it, which is Lover, L-O-V-V-R. And then you can also follow my kind of like curated like art account. I don't even know what you would call that. Just for Pleasure, which has all of my like favorite artists listed on it.
Do you ever have problems with like being shadow banned or anything by Instagram with that account?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah. For some reason, I've somehow managed to like slip under the radar.
Cool. Well, here's hoping
great.
You
yeah.
continue yeah. slipping. And as always, you can subscribe to Why Are People Into That wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow me at Tina Horns S on Twitter and Instagram. Please support the decriminalization of sex work wherever you can and do what you can to destigmatize whores, sluts, perverts, and queers. Now, everybody go enjoy your 15% off shopping. There's a lot of fetish stuff upstairs. So if you, your appetite is whetted by this conversation, the folks that work at the Pleasure Chest will be happy to point out all the like you know, electrical, like, scrotum devices, and which we didn't get to today, and hoods, and like fetish attire, and harnesses, and all kinds of things that they have upstairs. In addition to lots of other things that you may want to shop for. And thank you so much for coming, and I'll see you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.